Time changes everything. For me, becoming a single father of two young kids, it changed my ability to use my timeshare. The frustration of not being able to use it was compounded by annual maintenance fees that nearly tripled over a three-year period. I was desperate to get out. After searching online for sell my timeshare or get out of my timeshare, it just looked like one scam after another. I needed a real, permanent, and legitimate way to get out of this for good. I'm Brandon Reed, the founder of Timeshare Exit Team. We will get you out of the timeshare you can't use or can't afford anymore. We get people out safely, legally, and permanently. We are more successful because we have more solutions. Schedule a free consultation to review your ownership situation and find the best strategy for you. If we can't get you out, we will give you a full refund. Call Timeshare Exit Team today.
Call 800-929-8112. That's 800-929-8112. That's 800-929-8112.
Call Timeshare Exit Team today.
From the campus of Yale University, this is Business Talk with Jim Campbell, nationally syndicated across the country on the Biz Talk Radio Network and coming to you from our flagship stations, Yale Radio WYBC and 1490 AM WGCH Greenwich. All talk and all business, 60 minutes of radio with leading figures from the world of business along with the business of politics and sports. Inside the development of the iPhone with the principal software engineer for the greatest consumer product in history behind the secret walls of the golden age of Steve Jobs at Apple. Tonight on Business Talk with Jim Campbell, Ken Kuchenda was the principal software engineer of the iPhone software for Apple, inventor of the keyboard auto correction at Apple for over 15 years. In addition to iPhone development, worked on the software teams that created the Safari web browser, the iPad, and the Apple Watch. Holds more than 50 patents related to Apple innovation and is a graduate of Yale, one of our flagship stations. New book, Creative Selection, Inside Apple's Design Process During the Golden Age of Steve Jobs. Welcome from California, Ken. How are you?
Doing great. Great to be here with you.
Thank you very much. Our honor. Now, I have to say now, I will always have your name in mind now. Every time I try to type an F-bomb into a text message and it gets changed automatically to duck or ducking, I know you're the guy responsible.
I am the guy responsible, indeed. So now you can't quite put a face to a name. Perhaps maybe that's but you can put a name to the ducks now.
Well, how about now? I'm about to get an XS Max, right? And you're no longer at Apple, but you're a strong believer that the improvements will be enough in it, I assume, to justify that big price they charge.
I think the improvements to the camera in particular,
yes,
are really terrific. This whole move toward computational photography, where the software is going to help the hardware and just give you better photos just by pushing the button. So I think it's a very, very exciting advance in what you can expect from cell phone photography, yeah.
In fact, you just hit my big button. That's the biggest, that's the most important thing to me. I love pictures. I like the screen as big as possible because I can't stand missing the keys, you know, all the time.
You're right.
The smaller, which obviously you dealt with a lot in the book, which is kind of very interesting. Well, we got to start off with the most obvious question. What's it like working for Steve Jobs?
Well, it's a pretty pressure-packed environment. It certainly was. And, you know, Steve could be very intimidating, really. I mean, my job was we had an idea for a piece of software, mm-hmm, that would feature some new technology that we wanted to put into the software. Well, that work would land in, say, my lap, someone like me, a programmer.
Uh-huh.
And it was my job to come up with the ideas to present to him. And then naturally, I was collaborating with other designers and, other managers. But for high-profile features like, say, the keyboard on the original iPhone, Steve was going to want to try it out himself and ultimately approve it. And so this meant showing him work. And, yeah, he could be very, very intimidating. Going into a demo where he was going to look at work, very, very nerve-wracking. But, you know, but the thing is that if he liked the work, he would say so. So there was kind of a wide range of reactions that he might give. He might be sort of upset and tell you so in no uncertain terms. Mm-hmm. But if he liked the work, he could also be very, very praiseworthy. And for me, that in my career, that trade-off was worth it, because his approval also would mean that then my work, my effort, would go out into the world in an Apple product, get into the hands of millions and tens of millions, hundreds of millions of people. And so it was an opportunity to have that reach. You know, as a geek who likes to sit in the room by myself looking at a computer screen all day, it's a pretty remarkable opportunity to have. So running that gauntlet and having Steve be demanding and expect really top results, at least for me, helped me do my best work, and again, helped me to have that reach out into the world and hopefully put some good products in people's hands.
It's interesting to me that you were going through a demo that went well and how important demos were there, and you go through this whole description of it and everything and all the feedback and everything, and then you finish up, Steve said, a total of four sentences in that whole process, of which he was very praiseworthy. But four sentences.
Yeah. The amount of conversation could be very, very spare. And, you know, part of the idea behind that was that Steve didn't want a whole lot of introduction to the work that he was going to review. Mm-hmm. So in some ways, it was setting up a scenario where Steve was like a customer, maybe going into an Apple store and going and walking up to a table where a product is there and pick up the product, and without any preconceived notions, just like a person who doesn't work in the high-tech industry, pick up that product and see if you can figure out how it works. Decide for yourself, just by that experience of interacting with the product, decide for yourself if you want to spend the money. Bring that product into your life. Use it every day. Use it to make your calls, send your texts, take your photos, and use apps, play games, you know, all the features of the product. So going back to that demo experience, he wanted to mimic that what the customer would see and feel and experience by going into a store, maybe without any idea about that product, and try to decide for him or herself whether to buy it. And so, you know, someone like me, I could, you know, do my best to smooth talk him and explain every little detail and nuance of a product in a demo. But again, that's not what he wanted.
You know, it's he has this image of, in some places, of being kind of a terrible guy and not socially aware or whatever. But I get a sense from reading your stuff that it's really a function of the fact that he is so incredibly focused, which is what drove Apple.
He was an incredibly focused person, perhaps the most focused person that I've ever met, ever been in the same room with. And that focus, you know, in some ways, you know, Steve being the CEO of the company, being the one who was making the calls on a lot of these products, that focus, it was kind of like, you know, the pebble hitting the pond. It would ripple out for sure. You know, it was really most concentrated right around him. But you know, that focus and that drive, that determination to make the products great, which is really how I would describe what his focus was: making great products. And so, yes, he, you know, as is documented elsewhere, I think it's just part of the lore about him now, he paid less attention to social graces.
Yeah,
it, you know, people can be a complex package, and that was certainly part of his package. But that focus did really permeate the Apple culture, and I think it did have a real positive effect on how the products turned out.
I always I enjoy studying successful coaches and how they build a culture. So I found it interesting that you really compared him to Lombardi, which is people would normally draw that line.
Is interesting to me because you look at someone like Steve Jobs and Vince Lombardi, and if you try to evaluate the performance of the organizations that they led, well, I think it's hard to find people who were able to achieve more in a relatively short period of time. Steve took Apple when he returned to the company in the late 90s and turned it around from a company that had a pretty limited runway. You know, and some people say 90 days of cash left. You know, 15 odd years later, Apple was on track to becoming to what it is today, now 5 years after he's gone, the first trillion-dollar company. It's actually probably more than 5 years now, more like six or seven since he's gone. The point is that these leaders somehow were able to instill in their organization a winning way. And that was the kind of comparison that I was trying to draw. Lombardi being very, very focused on football and just a few fundamentals that were really important to him. And I think that Steve was the same way about Apple. A few fundamentals, keep the focus on making great products, and it totally turned Apple around.
It's interesting, yeah, because they're both maniacal focus on excellence and reducing to simplicity. It's interesting stuff. Do you think, we've got only about 30 seconds in this segment, that the secret formula was that they were consumer-focused as opposed to pure techie-focused?
Yeah, well, the idea about Apple was bringing together the best of technology, hardware, and software mm-hmm. with the best of design and culture. We called it the intersection, bringing together these two paths that seem to be going in different directions, but really cross them and position our effort right at that crossroads, bringing the best of products and technology, but bringing that to people and what's meaningful and useful to them in their lives.
You're listening to Business Talk with Jim Campbell over the Biz Talk Radio Network, 350 stations around the country. Go to biztalkradio.com, find the station closest to you, listen over the Internet, access our podcast. We'll get into the secret sauce of the development process at Apple in the next segment.
It may have been a messy divorce that cut your income in half, but not your bills. It might have been an injury or illness. Being in over your head is a vicious cycle. One day late, they charge you a late fee. Miss a payment, they double your rate. We fight for you using our proven experience and insider programs that credit card companies try to hide. If you've got over $10,000 in credit card debt, then call Action Debt at 800-384-7099. That's 800-384-7099. 800-384-7099.
Have you written a book and want to get it published? Then call Page Publishing at 800-557-6095 immediately. That's 800-557-6095. Page Publishing is looking for authors of all types of books, and unlike most publishers, Page Publishing will take the time to review each and every book submitted to them and give you their feedback. If they like what they read, they'll get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, the Apple iTunes Store, Barnes & Noble, and other outlets. They handle everything: editing, cover design, copyright protection, printing, publicity, and distribution. So if you've written a novel, children's book, cookbook, inspirational work, poetry, or a biography and want to get it published, then you need to call Page Publishing and do it immediately. Call 800-557-6095 now for your free author submission kit. Again, for your free author submission kit, call 800-557-6095. That's 800-557-6095. Your road to fame and fortune could very well start with this simple phone call. Call Page Publishing at 800-557-6095 for your free author submission kit.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go, and pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-217-5107. 800-217-5107. That's 800-217-5107.
Do you have an idea for an invention or new product? Do you think companies would be interested in your idea? Do you want to try to get a patent? Then call InventHelp now. InventHelp keeps your idea confidential and explains every step of the invention process. We create professional materials representing your idea and submit it to companies who are looking for new ideas. We have more than 9,000 companies who have agreed to review ideas in confidence. If a company shows interest in manufacturing your invention, we can negotiate on your behalf. We have helped over 10,000 clients receive patents. We also offer services including 3D modeling and animation demonstrating your idea, prototyping services, and we use state-of-the-art technology to show InventHelp client ideas to additional companies. Join the thousands of people just like you who chose InventHelp to pursue their idea. We are experienced. We are working for you. We are InventHelp.
Call us for free information at 1-800-607-8945. That's 1-800-607-8945. Again, 1-800-607-8945.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now, and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-569-3414. That's 800-569-3414. Again, 800-569-3414.
This is Biz Talk Radio, America's home for business talk. Online at biztalkradio.com.
We're back with the former principal engineer of iPhone software. That's Ken Koscienda. And we're going to talk now about some of these, the formula, if you will, that made Apple so successful in development. And you talk about seven things that sort of go in there, and I'm kind of interested in some of them, tying what the term is to say an example there, and starting off with inspiration. By the way, inspiration's fascinated that basically you say that inspiration is but really only 1% of the pie, and 99% is perspiration.
Right, right. Well, that comes from Thomas Edison. That's one of his famous quotes, referring to his work to invent, of course, you know, the electric light bulb, the photograph, motion picture, cameras, technology, you know, all of Thomas Edison's inventions. You know, he said that, you know, it came down to 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration, as you say. And a lot of that work, a lot of that perspiration is trial and error. It comes down to trying to take that idea, that little spark of inspiration, and make it real. And this is very, very difficult. You know, in some ways, there's a bit of a, I think, a misconception,
yeah,
about how high tech, you know, the great high tech Silicon Valley stories happen, where, you know, some genius wakes up one morning and says, aha, I have an idea, and, you know, something, 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 and then, you know, billion-dollar company. And it just doesn't happen that way. It certainly was not my experience at Apple. So that inspiration needed to be backed up by a lot of hard work.
Very interesting. In fact, you say you only had two eureka moments in your entire time there. You had 50 patents and invented autocorrect, if you will. Collaboration now. How does that... What is the sauce at Apple? Because from the outside, you hear all this secrecy stuff, so that you don't get a sense, well, that you can't really share what you're doing with anybody but besides your group and things like that. Collaboration refers to small teams only, or?
There is a lot of, you know, what, say, like even the military calls, like, small unit cohesion. Right? You get a group of people together, they get an assignment. You know, Steve, you know, his leadership style was very, very clear in saying what you were responsible for. And so these small teams, you know, got together, and they were really quite small. You know, the hallway where the iPhone software engineers were working for the first version, it was, you know, between, you know, 20 and 25 people. So it's a really very, very small team. Really.
It's really unbelievable. It's unbelievable when you think about it.
And so, you know, when it came time to file the big patent, the iPhone patent that describes, it's a big 350-page monster of a patent that describes all of the software for the original iPhone. There are 25 inventors on it, and Steve Jobs is one of them.
Wow.
So there were, you know, 24 of us then That actually includes software engineers and then designers who came up with these patentable ideas that went into making that touchscreen operating system and user interface system work as it did. And getting back to what you say about collaboration, that small group really, really pitched in. If you ever had an idea, you know, I would come into work usually earlier than a lot of other folks. Mm-hmm. I'm just kind of a morning person, and most people in software and in Silicon Valley are you know, skew more to the evening. So I would very often come into work and get a couple of hours of something done, and then have a piece of work, an idea, some little bit of progress to show people as they started rolling in. And you know, that opportunity to show the work and get that feedback and have people be honest and forthright, again, a kind of a ripple from the Steve Jobs culture, is that people would tell you, no, that's no good, or, yeah, I really like that. And then we try to dig in more specifically. What is good and, you know, worth keeping, and what is bad and really should, you know, kind of wind up on the cutting room floor? And that process of collaboration, you know, daily, multiple times a day, was a big part of what kept the progress moving.
This accountability thing to directly responsible individuals, where really everything is tied very tightly to an individual. You would have been tied tightly to the autocorrect feature.
Right. I was, we like you say, that term, we called it DRI in conversation. So the DRI, directly responsible individual, and I was that for the keyboard. And what was really, you know, it sounds so simple, but was really wonderful about that in the daily interactions was that if anybody had a problem with the keyboard, they know who to go talk to. And they could. They didn't need to go through the management hierarchy or fill out a form. I mean, we certainly had a software system for logging and cataloging and tracking our bugs, our software defects. But, you know, really the first step back in that era when things were so small, if somebody had a problem, well, they would get up from their desk and walk down, you know, just a couple doors and find me. And then, you know, again, an aspect of the collaboration, then those two people, the person reporting the problem, me needing, you know, being responsible for the problem and fixing it, we could decide what to do. We were empowered to make the software better.
Let me ask you this while we're on the small teams, because this kind of blew me away as well. When you guys developed Safari and Mozilla had a million lines of code in it, and you had a really, really small group. Now, first of all, I worked at IBM when I first got out of business school, and IBM might have 10,000 people working on the development of their OS system, right? And so it's really software by committee. And Apple didn't really believe that. So you get more efficiency, more benefit. Is that right? And B, do you risk having stars, essentially? You had 25 guys on the development of the iPhone. You risk any one of those folks leaving.
That is a danger, of course. I tell you, back then, I think that most of the people who were on that hallway now would look back and say, well, that was
the highlight
of our career. So yeah. it, we weren't really in danger, too many of us, of walking out, certainly not on that first product. But, you know, there's getting to the size of teams and software, one of the more famous books even ever written about software development is called The Mythical Man Month. The author is Frederick Brooks, and he was a program manager back at IBM in the 1960s working on System 360.
Yeah, the big one, yeah.
Important to my milestone operating system development project for IBM in the 60s. Mm-hmm. And he wrote about that experience OS 360 was late, and what they tried to do was, well, add more people. If we add more people to this project, we'll get it done faster.
Yeah.
And what he discovered was it was actually the opposite was true. Adding people to a late software project only makes it later. And this is counterintuitive until, you know, he did his analysis and went through and discovered that, well, it's when you bring people onto a new project, well, they need to be brought up to speed. Well, who's going to bring them up to speed? The people who are already on the project. Well, it just means that those people aren't doing work. They're trained. They're taking time out of doing direct progress and doing indirect progress, which is training, which is not, you know, not the direction you really want to go when you're already late. And plus, you know, adding people adds more communication paths.
Now, let's finish this segment with Mozilla had a million lines of code. What did you get when you guys got Safari finally out the door? How many lines of code were in it?
Yeah, that was probably a fraction of that, probably something around 200,000. So we found a different software project that enabled us to start with fewer lines of code and made it easy for a small team to make that project work.
Listening to Business Talk with Jim Campbell from our flagship stations, WGCH Greenwich, WYBC Yale Radio. We'll have more inside product development at Apple in our third segment.
I live alone and rarely have visitors. So when I slipped and fell in the kitchen last month and couldn't get to a phone, I knew I was in trouble.
Help!
I could barely move.
Help!
I tried calling for help, but no one could hear me. As I lay there, I couldn't help but think of my kids and grandkids having to go on without me. I was terrified. It took 8 hours for my neighbor to find me. It could have been the end of me. That's when I knew I needed Life Alert. With just one press of this button, I'm connected to the Life Alert Center, where I can get the help I need, even when I cannot reach a phone. With Life Alert, I'm never alone.
Call 1-800-414-1958 for your free Life Alert brochure. That's 1-800-414-1958. 1-800-414-1958. Call for your free Life Alert brochure today at 1-800-414-1958.
As a small business owner, there's one word that you absolutely dread: payroll. For small businesses, it's a big burden. You may think you're saving time and money doing it yourself, but come on, are you? Timesheets, processing checks, calculating taxes, a total waste of your time. Paychex simplifies payroll processing, saving you time and money. Submit your payroll online, fax it in, or call your dedicated Paychex payroll specialist. And you're done. Learn more at TryPaychex.com. Come on, do the math. The IRS dishes out 8 million penalties a year. Make one mistake and you're on the hook. On average, you're losing nearly one business day every month doing payroll. That's time and money you'll never get back, unless you get Paychex. More than 500,000 small businesses already do. Call 877-649-5324. Trade payroll pressure for peace of mind. Call now, 877-649-5324. That's 877-649-5324.
We paid less for our Craftmatic today than we did 20 years ago.
If you're still searching for the perfect solution to a good night's sleep, call now for prices and free information on today's Craftmatic adjustable beds. And then decide when you see how little they cost. Rated number one by consumers nationwide on ConsumerAffairs.com. Craftmatic beds come in all mattress types, including cool gel memory foam, for up to 50% less than today's leading memory foam brand. Enjoy temporary relief of low back pain, poor circulation, nighttime heartburn, mild arthritis. You'll sleep better in a Craftmatic adjustable bed. So if you're still searching for the perfect solution to a good night's sleep, call now for prices and information. And then decide when you see how little they cost. Discover Craftmatic for less, up to 50% less than today's leading memory foam brand.
Call 1-800-316-5271. That's 1-800-316-5271. 1-800-316-5271. Call now.
Attention business owners and independent contractors. This is a money-saving message from Tax Mediation Services. If your business owes $20,000 or more in taxes, we can help you today, right now. Listen, dealing with the IRS is no picnic. It's an intimidating and extremely stressful process, and you don't want to go it alone. Our attorneys know every law, every tax break, and every possible opportunity to help you resolve and reduce your tax debt. And if you owe more than $20,000, you may be at the top of their hit list. So don't take your tax debt lightly, because it will not go away on its own. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, your home, and even shut down your business. Call our tax experts today at 1-800-285-4765 and let us deal with the IRS while you focus on your business. That's 1-800-285-4765. Again, 800-285-4765.
If you're suffering from hearing loss, stay tuned for a special offer from the makers of Listen Clear, a revolutionary hearing aid breakthrough designed by top audio engineers to fit your ear almost invisibly. Right now, you can try Listen Clear hearing aids absolutely free for 45 days. You can also qualify for free shipping and free batteries for life. Listen Clear hearing aids are so lightweight and comfortable, you can wear them all day long.
They're practically invisible, too, so others won't even notice you're wearing them. And the best part is, you'll be able to hear almost everything, everywhere. So do something about your hearing loss. Call Listen Clear now to get started with your 45-day risk-free hearing aid trial. This special offer won't be available for long, so call Listen Clear now.
800-716-4650. 800-716-4650. 800-716-4650. We're here 24 hours a day to help. That's 800-716-4650.
This is Biz Talk Radio, America's home for business talk. Online at biztalkradio.com.
And we're back with Ken Cascende. He's the author of Creative Selection Inside Apple's Design Process During the Golden Age of Steve Jobs. And by the way, what do you mean by creative selection?
Well, this refers to my analysis, my formulation of how we did the work at Apple, that it was this long, incremental process of iterative improvement,
yeah.
Really a Darwinian process that you can, so the creative selection, you know, harkens back to the natural selection and artificial selection that Darwin wrote about. And we've already discussed a little bit this idea of, you know, getting some collaboration, trying to figure out what's good, what's not so good about a piece of software while it's under development. Well, you try to figure out from that point, try to figure out what the next step is. Make, you know, try to consolidate that good point and improve it from there. And we did that, you know, just version after version, iteration after iteration. And then we've also even touched on the end of that, which is, you know, ultimately then bucking that up to the team level, the executive level, and ultimately the CEO level, to where Steve was looking at the work, reviewing it, and approving it. And so it was this idea that, yeah, you can't just go from inspiration directly to a product. It's a lot of work, and, well, how do you structure that work? And it's this long process of iterative improvement.
I also thought it was interesting that the Apple philosophy was not to separate R&D from software implementation.
I was responsible throughout my career, but you know, I just need to confine it to the keyboard itself for that first iPhone. I was responsible for doing the research, for figuring out how might we type on a sheet of glass.
Yeah.
Kind of taking away, you know, changing away from what the smartphone standard was in those times in the pre-iPhone era, which is the BlackBerry. Right, everybody had the little plastic Chiclet keys, in hardware on the device with the smaller screen above, and you know, everybody loved it. Right, it's the nickname for the product, and some people was the CrackBerry, because people were so in love, so addicted to that little typing experience.
In your own mind, could you see a vision of typing on glass?
Well, in the beginning, not really, to be perfectly honest. But that was a key concept for the whole product, because if the keyboard could be in software, it meant that, unlike the BlackBerry, the keyboard and the iPhone could get out of the way when you weren't typing. So it opened up the device so that the whole screen was available for apps of all sorts. You could see a long list of email messages if you're just reading. You could play a game. You could turn the device to landscape and watch video. And so, you know, getting that keyboard in software so that it could get out of the way of the rest of the apps was a key concept for the whole product. So figuring out how to make that happen, yeah, well, that was the challenge eventually landed in my lap, and it was again a matter of trying to get some inspiration and going from there.
How did you figure out how to get autocorrect to work? It's very interesting to me how you looked at even from math probabilities, frequency usage, down to the actual getting how you get the words in there.
That there was a need to be some software assistance that was looking at your typing and trying to figure out what you meant to type. And this gets to a key concept, is that autocorrection, if I were to describe it in just non-technical terms, is that software intent, the intent of the software was to give you what you meant rather than what you did. So if you miss the key, it turns out that the shape of a word, letter by letter, makes a picture like a constellation in the sky.
Yeah.
And so the keyboard could figure out, yeah, you missed that key, but really that tap, if I just nudge it a little bit toward the letter that you probably meant, yeah, you meant that word, I'll just give that to you, suggest that.
That's cool.
As a replacement of what you actually did.
And in fact, you also describe it as sort of building like a tumbler where you run the letters or the numbers, and because of the fact that where they're located near, and therefore they're more likely to be X, Y, and Z, et cetera.
Right. So this gets to and so a way of describing this is that the first iPhone auto correction algorithm didn't do spelling correction. Right, it didn't look at how you may have spelled a word wrong. It looks like how you may have tapped a word wrong. And so this idea I had of describing is, you think like a bike lock that has maybe four numbers on it, and you can spin the tumblers around to get the right number. We'll replace those numbers with letters. And naturally, the tumblers would need to be a sort of larger circumference. But the letters next to each other are the ones that are close to each other on the keyboard itself. So it's not arranged. The tumblers aren't arranged A through Z. They're arranged by the proximity of the letters to one another. So my job with the job of the autocorrection was to turn the tumblers really as few clicks as possible to get the word that was the most popular in the dictionary, most popular in the language.
Pretty amazing. So did you come up with that logic yourself, or?
Yeah, that was my job. Again, we had very, very small teams. So it was, while I was doing that, people were figuring out how to get a web browser shrunk down so it could run on a phone, and figuring out the whole, app design and designing, the animations and figuring out, how to keep the phone connected to cell networks, but switch over to Wi-Fi. I mean, there's all kinds of work. So yeah, I was the one really charged with the keyboard. There wasn't the keyboard team. But there was only one person on it.
So, did you feel intense pressure or fear of failure? One of the things that you mentioned in the book, which I'd forgotten, was the Newton device, that personal device, failed.
Right. Well, you see, this did create a lot of pressure on me, because Apple did make a product that where the intended text entry system was really kind of a new innovative idea. The Newton with a stylus, and you would try to write with your handwriting, and the purpose of the device would be that it would recognize your handwriting and turn that into computerized text.
Now so you've got the algorithms to try to logically come up with the right words or the most highly likely. The other side of that, what about all the words? How do they get in there?
Right. Well, it turns out that I had a stroke of good fortune here, which is that Apple wasn't a startup. In some ways we like to run the iPhone team as if it was a startup, a small team of just a few dozen people working on this software, but Apple had this immense back catalog of projects because it had been in existence for decades before we started on the iPhone project. So I dipped into the Apple archives of previous projects and found English word lists. There were a couple here and there, and I compiled the list. But then I became the dictionary editor myself, because we discovered that there needed to be some updates, LOL wasn't in, right, any of those older word lists. So it needed an update. But I had a very, very firm foundation to build on from previous Apple work.
And you had to be careful, or you actually made sure that it didn't say, suggest dirty words or things like that, right?
Well, you see, it's an interesting problem that we ran into as I was, as the autocorrection algorithms were getting better and people were starting to use this and type more realistic things, we ran across this problem of typing swear words. But even sort of worse than that is words that are hateful.
Right, like racism and stuff.
Right. And so we decided that as a product that we would never want to suggest, we would never want to help people to slur or demean, you know, anybody. So just, you know, their racial, gender, the, you know, national, you know, ethnic issues, none of
yeah.
that would
yeah.
be part of the product. We didn't want to be helpful for that. So those words, I had to actually go do research to find all those words to build up a complete dictionary.
Wow.
That even if the auto-correction algorithm recognized them, it would never suggest them.
Fascinating. Now, as we last on this segment, what was the single biggest aha moment you had in the development of the keyboard for the iPhone?
Yeah, this came when the auto-correction code got good enough, and that we decided to turn it on full time. That it wouldn't only give you suggestions of what word you thought, but that it would actually automatically change your typing. If you typed R-H-E space, it would just change it to the, and that was that. And and the discovery of that it would actually work well enough that you could just type, and trust the software, and that most of the time it would give you what you wanted, was this eureka aha moment that the software could be automatic, that it could be auto-correction. And that was really the one of those two breakthrough moments in my whole Apple career.
Final segment coming right up.
Hi, I'm Joe Clark, host of Consider This, found right here Sunday mornings at 8 o'clock. Join us as we break down the financial world, things that truly matter to you, things that you should consider. You can find out more at our website at yourlifeafterwork.com, but join us Sunday morning, grab a cup of coffee, and let's break down the five critical elements, the things that can really change your financial life. Numbers 800-928-4001, yourlifeafterwork.com. We'll see you Sunday morning.
It may have been a messy divorce that cut your income in half, but not your bills. It might have been an injury or illness. Being in over your head is a vicious cycle. One day late, they charge you a late fee. Miss a payment, they double your rate. We fight for you using our proven experience and insider programs that credit card companies try to hide. If you've got over $10,000 in credit card debt, then call Action Debt at 800-384-7099. That's 800-384-7099. 800-384-7099.
Attention investors, respected names in the financial services industry are not evaluating if there will be a significant market downturn, but when. Higher interest rates and prospects of a trade war suggest the stock market is headed into a perilous direction. Subprime mortgages, which are back, could potentially devastate the real estate market, as they did before. And with stocks simply overdue for a fall after this second longest bull run in history, even bullish analysts are recognizing these indicators that equities are in big trouble and have projected stock market losses up to 40%. You can protect your IRA or 401k for maximum safety and opportunity with physical gold and silver, as they are assets that remain genuine stores of value no matter what's happening in the marketplace. Call Augusta Precious Metals today at 855-858-5806. That's 855-858-5806 to get your free guide to precious metals investing. Call Augusta Precious Metals today at 855-858-5806. That's 855-858-5806.
Time changes everything. For me, becoming a single father of two young kids, it changed my ability to use my timeshare. The frustration of not being able to use it was compounded by annual maintenance fees that nearly tripled over a three-year period. I was desperate to get out. After searching online for sell my timeshare or get out of my timeshare, it just looked like one scam after another. I needed a real, permanent, and legitimate way to get out of this for good. I'm Brandon Reed, the founder of Timeshare Exit Team. We will get you out of the timeshare you can't use or can't afford anymore. We get people out safely, legally, and permanently. We are more successful because we have more solutions. Schedule a free consultation to review your ownership situation and find the best strategy for you. If we can't get you out, we will give you a full refund. Call Timeshare Exit Team today.
Call 800-929-8112. That's 800-929-8112. That's 800-929-8112.
Call Timeshare Exit Team today.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 1-800-521-9579 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 1-800-521-9579 to take your call right now. Call 1-800-521-9579. That's 1-800-521-9579. Again, 1-800-521-9579.
National Funding Group has just released $100 million in easy access small business funding to businesses that gross at least $100,000 a year. You can have fast access up to $500,000 in new business capital in as little as 48 hours. Think about the ways you could grow your business if you had up to $500,000 cash infusion. Call a NFG funding expert now. The process is easy. It only takes about 5 minutes. Then our management-owned lending team looks at your application for a fast approval. You can get 100% funded in about 2 days. If you need up to $500,000 in working capital to run your business and you gross at least $100,000 a year, call NFG and apply today. 800-296-1564. 800-296-1564. 800-296-1564. That's 800-296-1564.
This is Biz Talk Radio, America's home for business talk. Online at biztalkradio.com.
And we're back with Ken Kushenda, ex-iPhone, Safari, iPad, Apple Watch, software engineer, all of some of the biggest products ever in any consumer market, much less for all from Apple. You know, when Apple made its name doing these big disruptive deals, the music industry with the iPod, and then, of course, the phone cellular industry, Steve Jobs is no longer with us. Is Apple going to be able to do another big disruptive deal in your mind?
Well, I think that Apple is the best positioned company still to create that next big thing. And I mean, you even look at a product that we haven't really discussed yet and that I didn't discuss in the book, but the Apple Watch. The potential that the watch has to improve our health is really extraordinary.
I love it, too. I have mine.
Yeah, I do, too. I went and got a Series 4. For years and years, I would have all the new hardware issued to me, and so it's a big change for me to have to go out to the store and buy these.
Now, I haven't been able to get a four yet here at our Apple store, so.
Oh, yeah. I actually went one and got lucky one day. I just went and bought it in the store. But the potential of the software to track your heartbeat, rumblings, you know, in the future that it may be help diabetics to monitor their blood sugar levels. This is a remarkable piece of technology, really just improving people's lives, perhaps even saving lives. So, it doesn't seem, the iPhone was this huge groundbreaking product. And maybe, it kind of comes once a generation. Apple is still, in my estimation, making some pretty great products and some new ones that weren't around when Steve was around.
Some of the ideas that you mentioned in the book, eye tracking, augmented reality, what are some of the things that you see on the horizon?
Yeah, you mentioned augmented reality. I mean, to me, this is a type of software that has the potential, again, to become ingrained into our lives in such a way that it just gives these futuristic improvements. So, an example of that would be you're traveling in a foreign country where you don't speak the language that they speak there. And so there's a bunch of signage around, directing you to maybe the museum that you're looking for. And you hold your phone up to a local map, and the phone will take a photo of that, upload it to the network, translate it, bring it back to you, perhaps even do this locally, that you don't even maybe even need to be connected to the network, where the software and the hardware and the services and the networking will just transparently translate all the world's languages. And this is and show you that picture, overlaying it onto the map as you're looking at it in real time. Now, this is the potential of the future. It's not something we have yet, but it shows it shows the potential of where this technology might take us.
You don't see them doing a car or a car software platform or something like that?
Well, I'm not really in the position to say what Apple comment so much on future products. I mean, there's certainly in the press there's word that Apple is working on a car, yet another product that could be disruptive. I think we're just going to have to wait and see what Apple does in the future on that.
So why'd you leave Apple?
It's a good question, and I realized after a certain point that I'd been there a long time. And I'm over 50 years old now, and I asked myself, well, in my career, is this it? And it came to a point where I also decided that, I'm more of a 0 to 1 guy than, version 0 to version 1, nothing to something, rather than a version 11 to version 12 kind of guy, which is where, the iPhone is now. And so I just made a big decision to try something new. And I didn't really know what that was, but then this book project presented itself. I started talking to some people and got introduced to an editor at a New York publishing company. So for this last year and a half almost, I've been writing this book and really enjoying it.
So it was fun to write a book?
Well, it was certainly different. I like to think that, I've tried to build my career around innovation, things that I haven't done before.
Right.
I never made a software keyboard for a touchscreen smartphone until I made one. I never wrote a book until I wrote one. And so this is full steam ahead and figure it out as you go. I tried to apply some of the lessons that I learned at Apple toward this book writing project. And like at Apple, I just did the best I could. Now there's a book.
Did it feel like Apple was changing a lot after Steve Jobs passed away?
Apple is undergoing long-term changes. It's a much bigger company than when I started.
Yeah.
Back then, I joined before the iPod came out.
Really?
So the company had the Mac, and 4 months after I joined was when the first big, consumer, sort of non-computer consumer, personal technology device came out from Apple. And so now there are many. There are product lines. It's a much bigger company. And, naturally the company has to change to support all these products and to give these yearly updates and try to add in these new health features, and photography features. Those ideas like that were just not really on the horizon at the Apple that I joined back in 2001.
There's always the law of large numbers. It's worth, the market value is over $1 trillion now. Can Apple keep growing as far as the eye can see, or has maybe the best growth behind us now, just on the numbers? But
yeah, well, it would be hard to imagine how Apple could become 10 times larger than it is now. I don't know if there are enough people on the planet.
Well, now that we'd be half the size of the U.S. GDP, So.
Right. Yeah. I mean, pretty remarkable, huh? So, to me, I think that the focus, keeping it the same as it ever was, make great products. And if you keep doing that, if the company keeps doing that, I'm sure the bottom line will keep the market happy.
It's a great book. It takes you right deep inside, and you get a sense of what the culture is there and how software development's done for, obviously, some of the most exciting products ever. It's Ken Kashenda. He's a principal software engineer on the iPhone, inventor of the auto-correction functionality on the keyboard. Creative selection inside Apple's design process during the golden age of Steve Jobs. This has been Business Talk with Jim Campbell. Our next show, we were talking about Lombardi before. We're going to actually look inside the legacy of Bill Belichick, NFL coach of the Patriots. Thanks to the iPhone developer, Ken Kashenda. Thanks to our national audience for listening. See everybody next Sunday on Business Talk.
opinions you hear on Biz Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com. This is Biz Talk Radio, America's home for business talk, online at biztalkradio.com.